What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Member Country Music Podcast. I said that really, really fast. It means I'm excited. I think it just means I'm stoked, but I'm really excited. Neil, man, thanks for coming to hang with me today. I have Neil Medley hanging out with me. I'm stoked, man. I'm a big fan of you.
Thank you, man.
When you responded back, I was like, oh, sweet. You've written some of my favorite songs, and your new project is great. So we're going to dive into all that too. But thanks for coming to hang with me, dude.
It's absolutely my pleasure. I thank you for reaching out.
Of course. I guess today's Tuesday. If you're listening right now, it's Friday, obviously, but as of current, it's Tuesday. You had a couple of songs get cut and they were out on Friday with Chase Bryant. That's pretty awesome. That's a great start to the week, right?
It's been a great start of the month. I think some things are swirling, and it's always a good feeling, because you, especially when you start the new year, like, we've gotten some good holds, we've gotten some cuts, and I'm like, what's going on? Some Januaries are literally dry Januaries, where there's nothing going on. You're like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen this year? But I feel the momentum of last year kind of bleeding into this year, which is, it's fantastic. So
is there a reason for that, or is it just, do you think it just happens to be just the year?
I would like to, I'm going to go ahead and say we put in a lot of hard work last year. Not that we don't work hard every year, but with the record last year and still writing full time, 4 days a week, 5 days a week, and putting out an album, learning that what it is to put out an album. It was my first record. So there, we were working a lot. It's nice to feel validated that all that hard work was for something.
That's pretty sweet.
I kind of blame it, or give that credit of, like, when you work that hard and you prepare that much, some good things should happen. And thankfully some good things are.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love it. And I think it's great that your 24 is off to a really good start. I just by association, I know that the songwriting world is kind of, January is kind of that weird spot for a lot of people, and you know, people's holidays go a little bit longer than just, you know, to the first of the month or whatever it might be. It might be now about this point where people are starting to kind of get back in the swing of things. And
writing especially is a muscle. So when you're coming off of a couple weeks off, it's always a slow kind of startup. Yeah. I usually try to front end the year with just friends and people I really connect with. No new people. Mm-hmm. Try not to do, unless it's an artist I've written with before, but I try to eliminate, you know, the new factor and just settle in with something that's very comfortable, that gets me off to a really good start.
Oh, that's smart.
Kind of warming up my brain, getting it back to the way it was early December.
That's smart. I didn't actually think about that, because at the end of the day, like, you're just kind of hanging out with buddies, and if something happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it just doesn't happen. And there's always lunch.
There's always lunch.
Exactly. There's always lunch. Exactly. So I that's actually really smart. I never actually thought about that. It's pretty cool. It's that's a good way to do it.
It took me a few years to learn that. So sure. I mean, most Januaries are kind of bare. Everybody is trying to figure out what they're going to do for the year, but a lot of people cut the first quarter of the year as far as artists are concerned. So it's always good to get going as fast as you can.
Sure. Yeah. So let's, before we dive into some more stuff here, why don't we get a little bit of a quick backstory on you? I know you're from Louisville, Kentucky, but what is your, kind of, how'd you find yourself in Nashville writing songs? That's the one thing I love about this. And I feel weird asking that question all the time, because I've been doing this for so long, and I feel like I always ask that question, but everyone's story is totally different, which makes it really cool for me. So,
I went to University of Kentucky, graduated there with a journalism degree.
Nice.
And was going to take a job at a small paper in Bardstown, Kentucky, bourbon capital of the world. Mm-hmm. And I was working construction with my dad before I took that job. And I always wanted to be a songwriter. And it just hit me one day. I was like, I'm not going to stop in Bardstown. I'm going to keep driving down I-65 and head to Nashville. And my brother took me in a U-Haul trailer and dropped me off. I didn't know anyone. I just showed up.
Love
Like,
it.
I have no idea what made me think I could write songs or, you know, I did write songs in college, but it wasn't something that, you know, it's just, I call it a little naive arrogance, I guess, and just show up. Yeah, I can do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't an easy ride. I got lost in kind of a career. I took a day job that turned into a career, met a woman that became my wife. We had a child. I got another job that demanded more of my time. And before you know it, I was so far away from songwriting that I didn't even know if I wanted to do it anymore. And wow. Then my mom got, you know, she developed cancer and ended up passing. And that was kind of the moment where I went, I'm here for a reason. It's not to be a marketing manager for a distribution company. It's to be a songwriter. Let's give it a shot. And my wife, she's been so generous. And she was like, you go chase it and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And she's a boss lady. She's a butt kicker. So she's like, I got this. You chase the dream. And she always says, he chases the dream, I finance the dream.
That's amazing. So
luckily we had that, I had a very supportive wife that allowed me to go chase this ridiculous, crazy dream of a job.
Yeah.
And, so I started writing songs. One of the first people I wrote with was, Brent Cobb.
Nice.
And first song we wrote was a song called Tailgate Blues, and it was recorded by Luke Bryan. And then overnight, I became a wanted songwriter. Like
isn't that crazy? That's
yeah.
Nuts.
The week before, they were like, just keep sending us songs. You know, these are pretty good. And then Luke announced that he was going to cut our song, and everybody's like, I always knew you were a great songwriter. I want to offer you, a publishing deal. So I ended up signing with Sony, and then it was off to the races.
That's amazing. I see. That's why I like asking this question, because I wouldn't have known that, right? So like, so you moved to Nashville. What year did you move to Nashville?
I think it was right around 2000.
Okay, so were you there 10 years before you started writing songs again?
Yes. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, because I, like I said, I had we were on our we had our second daughter right at the time Luke said he was gonna cut Tailgate Blues, and I remember walking her down the street in a like one of those umbrella strollers. And then Brent Cobb called me and said that Luke was going to cut our song, and sent me a picture of Luke with the lyric sheet.
Wow.
And I remember just running down the street with that umbrella stroller just shaking, and I was like, I'm going to call my wife, I'm going to call my dad. I mean, it was I was here for a while, and like I said, lost in, you know, just corporate America, and just flipped that switch and jumped over to where I really belong.
But you know what's interesting is, like, I think sometimes that it just takes to get there first, right? Like, yeah, maybe it took you 10 years to flip the switch and say, okay, like, this is what I came here to do, let's do it. But also, maybe that was a blessing, because maybe if you go in 2000, right, and you get so many no's, you're like, what am I doing? And you move back to Kentucky, there's all these things that don't happen. You know what I mean? So like, maybe it's a blessing. Maybe you don't burn out because you wait 10 years. Now you have this fire lit under your ass and you're like, all right, let's do it.
Yeah. I think there's a little bit of that. There was with me, there's insecurities. Like, do I have what it takes to do what they're doing, you know? And if I don't put myself out there, I won't hear no.
Yeah.
But when you take that leap and then you start getting used to no's, or you become bulletproof to no's, that was the best thing for me. It really was. It was, you know, I thought at the time, probably before that time, you know, no was the worst thing you could absolutely hear. I mean, that's where it ended. You know, it was awful. And then, you know, just looking for a deal, you'll hear no's every day. You know, when you're writing songs, you hear, no, that's not right for me. That's not right for my artist. That's not right. And you just go, okay, what about this one? Yeah. Okay, what about this one? So it was a good conditioning to in life. I mean, I bring it up to my girls now. I mean, no is just an opportunity to turn it into a yes. You know, it's that cliche kind of thing. So, and it is true, especially in the, you know, in music business.
Yeah. That's awesome. Do your girls think you're pretty cool? Because I feel like if my dad was, I mean, I think my dad's cool anyway, but if my dad was a songwriter, I'd be like, whoa, this is awesome.
Well, I think they have moments. They don't like to show it.
That's fair. Because you know, then they know that you've won. They don't want to do that.
Exactly. They got good poker faces. One of the cool things that happened, and they hear me sing my songs. They hear my demos.
Yeah.
They go, oh my goodness, turn this down, you know, and but then there's songs they love that I've written. Maybe they don't know I've written, but I sneak them in there. And I love this song. And they're like, yeah, I wrote that one. But when we had, when Jake Owen had a number one, my only number one with our song Made For You, he had us out at the Ryman. He invited me and my family. And he was playing a show. And I didn't know they were going to bring us on stage, but they kind of turned it into a big number one party for us. Awesome. And brought us out on stage and up in a balcony. My wife and my daughters were up there, and my wife said they were so excited for me. And, and unfortunately the spotlights were in my eyes. I couldn't see it, but I'll take her word for it.
yeah. Right.
I think that might've been the moment they finally got what I do.
Yeah.
And obviously that's a bigger scale than what I do it on. But I mean,
sure.
That was pretty cool of Jake to have us, and it was
that's a cool moment.
Yeah, it was a great moment as a dad, just to sit there and go, you know, you believe in something hard enough, long enough, something still might happen, you know. Yeah. And it happened that night.
That's so awesome, man. Congratulations. It's really cool. I think family's really important. The one thing I love what you're saying is like you know how everyone always says like it takes a village? Like it literally does. It literally takes a village. Like you need every part of your family to have any part of success. Like that's just how it is. And I love that you're so family oriented. I think that's so important.
Well, they are the kind of the grounding of things. Cause it's a rough industry. You know, there's not, like I said, I use the term off to the races. That's probably incorrect because I had the loot cut and nothing else for like 2 years of substance.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's my girls that I focus on, my wife that kind of, you know, she levels out, you know, the finances and she's doing that. And I mean, it does take everyone. And just to come home to them after like a hard day where you heard 50 no's or a cut fell through or you didn't get the single or, you know, the politics of this town.
Yeah.
And you're like, eh, it doesn't matter. You know, we'll get them tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for them and I'll be back to being a dad and we'll reboot. And
at the end of the day, they don't know what happened. It doesn't matter.
They don't care.
They do not care. They really don't. What kind of music do they listen to? Do you guys listen to the same type of music?
A lot of Taylor Swift right now.
Okay.
She's big. She had a big moment a few years ago and now she's back around.
Yeah.
But they listen to The Weeknd. Trying to think, my daughter's gotten back into like classic rock stuff.
That's cool for you.
Yeah,
my dad was over the moon when I was 15, 16, going back and what I listened to growing up when I was five. You know what I mean? Like,
awesome. You know how the concert t-shirts are back.
Yeah.
They'll come in like, Georgia, my youngest, was wearing a Van Halen shirt the other day. I was like, all right, now we got to sit down and you got to learn at least three Van Halen songs.
Yeah.
You can't just show up in a Van Halen shirt. Sure. And you know, so, but yeah, they listen to like 90s rock and but I think Georgia, the younger one's just full force pop music and Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Hey, that's a common theme for teenagers and young girls. I think that's a common theme. It's funny because, like, you know, I live up here in, I don't even know if I said this. I live up here in Northern New Jersey by New York City. So, you know, the style of music is not me, you know, people don't listen to what I listen to for the most part. I mean, there's a lot. I shouldn't say it. There's a lot of country music fans, but no one, I've yet to find someone who enjoys it as much as I do. I think there's a lot of people that like it, but there's not a lot of people that love it. And so because of that, I do have a lot of friends that love classic rock, and which is where I can kind of get my little, like, you should listen to this song. You should listen to this song. Like, you might like this. I can get my digs in there. But it's so funny because, like, you know, growing up, my dad always listened. I'm a big, and I guess from Jersey, I have to say this, but I'm a big Springsteen guy. My dad is too. And that's kind of my roots. And then everything else, Springsteen, the Eagles, Bob Seger, like, those were kind of the people I grew up on. And, but because of that, you know, I think it's funny, like, the way your life goes musically, because, like, that's what I started with. Then I kind of, like, went down a weird path at, like, 10, 11, 12. And then, like, 13, 14, 15, I, like, kind of started touching country music and going back to rock. And that's obviously where I am now. But I think it's
we
so
all
fun.
Do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never know why it happens. I don't know. I don't get it.
I've been through my rap phase. I've been through my classic rock. I've been through my Green Day punk phase.
Yeah.
But always it was country first. Like, I remember sitting, like, we had this PE teacher called Mr. Payne. He was a basketball coach, and
he brought some pain.
Yeah, he brought the pain. And like, everybody was listening to rap then and different things, and I had my headphones on one day, and he goes, "Will you listen to medley?" I said, "I'm listening to Hank Williams Jr." Like, those old records. Just sitting there, we were waiting for the bell to ring. He goes, "That's my boy." he was like, "We should listen to Hank sometimes." I was like, "Absolutely, I listen to him every day." So,
yeah.
But yeah, we all go through our phases. But I've always been, like, just country always spoke to me.
Yeah,
country, you know, the Texas guys, Guy Clark, Townes Van Zandt,
yep.
Steve Earle, they always spoke to me.
Oh, Steve Earle's so good.
Yeah, he's so good. Ronnie Corral, Emmylou Harris. I bought my first guitar because Emmylou Harris was playing that guitar. I mean, it was just,
Sweet.
Yeah, it's always been always been at heart a country fan.
I think that's amazing. And you know, it's funny because, like, obviously I wasn't always, but I think people think that I have always been, just because, like, it's, you know how, like, you do one thing for so long and it's, like, starts to become your personality. Like, I feel like that started to become my personality, and people are always like, "Well, do you listen to anything else?" I'm like, "Yeah, I mean, I listen to other things, not often, but I do. I mean, I sometimes go against the grain. I listen to other things. The one thing I don't think I listen to anymore, and I'm willing to put this one to bed and probably never open up the box again, is I'm willing to put rap to bed for me. Like, for me, it's the one thing I've never been, I've tried multiple times. I've never been able to connect with it. I can't find a connection with it. I don't know what and why I would like something besides, like, the songs I listened to in 2008 that I loved as kids.
Exactly. Right?
But, like, other than that, like, I can't. And people make fun of me all the time for it. They're like, because I'll be like, "Who is this?" For example, this is actually a funny story. So I went to see Taylor Swift with my girlfriend in, like, over the summer.
That's
And
a nice boyfriend move right there.
I'm telling you, I took one for the team. Let's just put it that way. But so I went, and there is a rapper. Her name is Ice Spice. And she, like, came out with Taylor, and I looked at Kristen and I go, "Is this one of the Spice Girls?" And she was like, "Are you kidding me?" I was like, what do I know? I don't know. I wasn't a Spice Girls fan anyway, and I'm not an Ice Spice fan, clearly. So I was like, what do I know? And I said that story to a few of my buddies, and I got torn up. I got absolutely roasted. I was like, "Guys, we're, like, in our 20s. We shouldn't know who this is either. I don't know why it's, like, such a big deal. Like, what do we..." I don't know. Whatever. I have no idea. But
yeah, there's just a few, like, the classics of rap. I'm still involved, you know. I'll still turn them up, you know.
Sure, but me too.
But it's, yeah, I have no idea who anyone is,
or,
you know, not, this probably says more about me than them, but not a lot of the pop people either. My girls teach me more about pop music than if I went out on my own. I'm lost out there, and they kind of lead, put the breadcrumbs for me. They're
my
like,
sister's 18. That's the only reason why I know anything about any of that.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it would be all cowboy hats and twang all the time, and that's that.
That's
And
right.
I'm okay with that. There's nothing wrong with that. So I think that's great. But yeah, no, I don't know. It's just I sometimes I feel like I sometimes feel like how I sometimes think that my dad is. You know what I mean? Because my dad's so like, oh, these guys could never hold up in the 70s or blah, you know, whatever. And sometimes I'm like, man, I think I'm turning into my dad. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I
Absolutely.
think I'm turning into my dad.
We all do. We
Yeah,
all do.
I
Yeah.
bet. I bet. I just think it's hilarious. I love it. We didn't, we have to talk about some of the songs you've written over the years. Obviously you mentioned, Tailgate Blues with Luke Bryan. And there's a ton more. I mentioned She's Just Like That and Over You By Now, Chase Bryant. That's on that new EP that just came out, Made For You, Jake Owen, number one. I mean, there's a ton. Even like more independent guys like Matt Roy, Morning New Orleans. He's a Bergen County guy, actually. He grew up 10 minutes
Oh,
from
really?
where I live. And
I love Matt.
yeah, Matt's great. He's fantastic. And then like looking at her Old Hickory, we could talk about Old Hickory for days. You have no idea. So like you're kind of
I just
hitting
wrote
all
with
the,
him yesterday. Yeah.
and that's fantastic. Like I've known Tim for a pretty decent amount of time, for a few years I've known him. And I think they're great. Like I love that you're writing with some of these newer people that are trying to make it, but you're also getting bigger cuts from bigger names. I think that's fantastic. You're kind of hitting the board.
Yeah, I think that's something you got to do. I'm just swinging, man.
Yeah.
Especially when you're a dad and a husband and, you know, you got bills. I
Yeah.
mean, I always say I'm my own publisher, even though I have two publishers, Riverhouse and Sony. But I mean, I got to go out there and work harder than they work for me.
Sure.
You know, just because at the end of the day, they're balancing a bunch of different songwriters.
Yeah.
I'm only balancing one. So let's take full advantage of my time.
Sure. Be
You know, so
proactive. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we've had a bunch of good luck. You know, a lot of those are independent people. There's been some good, we've been the next single a few times. We've been the single a few times that didn't work. And then, Jake was the one that kind of put us on the board with the number one, but yeah, it's been a roller coaster. I mean,
but I think that there's something to be said about that, right? Like I didn't even mention Understand Why, Cody Johnson. Like I think that song's fantastic. I think
oh,
whatever
thank you.
Cody does is just absolutely incredible. But I love that song, and that was a big turning point for me in my country music life. I was listening to Cody. I've been listening to Cody Johnson for like 10 years, but at some point I was like, man, I'm really looking for this guy to make a big splash in the world. And I think that song did a lot for him and obviously you as well, but I love that song. And I think that that's fantastic too. But what I was getting at is that I think that writing with these younger brains that may be independent, like that really allows you to adjust how you're writing, right? Because maybe you're not just writing to write a song to, I mean, of course you hope that it's a number one, but like you're not writing a number, going into a room of trying to write a number one. You're just writing
Sure.
a song, and if it flows, it flows. And with guys like Timothy and Timothy Baker and Dan Alley and you know, all those guys, like those are guys that I feel like are kind of doing the same thing that allows you to be a little more creative and do some different things that maybe you wouldn't have thought about the day before.
Yeah, and those guys really know how to write a song. So there's not as much mentoring with them, because they know what they want to sing and they know how to write it. So with them, it's just giving them the best lines, the best idea I can possibly get, and stay out of their way and let them do their harmonies, their, like, give them something to sing. Because me and Dan have written a bunch of songs now, Dan Alley with Old Hickory, and I mean, he keeps getting better. And then to hear him on a work tape or a demo, I mean, come on now. I think we've gotten a couple pretty high profile cuts lately that haven't come out yet, so I'm not going to jinx us.
Sure.
But it's because of Dan singing it, and you know, his melodies. I mean, he's so good.
Yeah.
And all you got to do is be your best that day and help them get to where they're going. There's some younger people that need mentoring, that kind of need to figure out.
Sure.
A lot of people come here, they don't even know what their voice is or what they want to say. I think all of us want to be there when they figure that out. and not try to force our stuff on them, because it's usually not going to work. But it's that mix of mentoring and just lifting them up. And some days I think I know what I'm doing. And then you get in with a guy like Brent Cobb or that writes from a totally different angle than you. And you're like,
yeah,
I don't know anything about writing. This guy knows what he wants to do. Let's just help him do what he's doing. So,
just steer the ship at that point. And
hope
finds the point. But I think that's the beauty of
the guardrails. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Keep him in the path. Yeah.
I think that's the beauty of co-writing though. Like you don't, not one person has to take more of the lift than the other, or one person can, the other person can help, and vice versa. I think that's really important. But I also think that like Brent, right? Like I think that, yeah, of course, like when you, especially when you like listen to the stuff he's written and the music he's put out himself, like you obviously know that he's like on this whole other side, like pulling from all these other areas that is not super traditional in terms of, you know, what he's going for. And I think that's what makes him so great. But I also just think that it's like really important to have, you know, your style and his style, and that's what makes the song like that. That's why I think co-writing is so important. Like I used to always be like, man, like it's kind of like when I started doing this almost 4 years ago. And when I started that, there was a lot I didn't know. And part of that was the co-writing life. And I was like, man, why would you want to co-write? Is it just because people can't write songs by themselves? I don't know. I didn't know. But then you learn that co-writing's probably harder, one, and two, it allows a better song because you get different styles and different heads, and that's really important.
Yeah, I was that guy. I was certainly that guy. Everything I wrote before I got like a publishing deal was like 100%er, you know. Yeah. You just come in and then you learn the economy here of what goes on and the networking, the community, and you start getting together with guys that have similar or completely opposite talents than you are, and you learn the benefits very quickly. It is harder, and in some ways it's a lot easier writing with someone, because I know, especially with like one of my good buddies, Ryan Beaver, if I walk in the room with Ryan, I know my thoughts, my ideas are safe with him. And he knows where I want to go with it.
Right.
So it becomes more like there's two of me there instead of there's two separate people trying to battle for a line here and there. So same thing with Randy Montana. I know once you give him a good idea and you're talking it through, we're going to deliver exactly what I had in mind, even better than what I expected. So
that's cool.
It is a different muscle though. It certainly is.
That I just in life, like I think people talk about writing songs all the time. And for me, like I'll never wrap my head around that. It's just not, I don't think creatively, it's just where my brain goes. I understand the process. I get it. I can't fathom being able to put my thoughts on a page in song form. Like that just doesn't compute with me. So, but because of that, like, I think that it's really cool to hear someone like you say, like you have those guys that like your thoughts are safe and like you know where you're gonna go, and like you mentioned the first few weeks of January, like those are guys that you could go and write songs with just to kind of get it going, right? And like it is a muscle, like it, I think it does take a certain brain. I was telling this to one of my buddies yesterday. I was like, it takes a certain head to be able to write a song. I don't have that, and he does. And I was like, you do, I don't. And he's like, I think that if you just worked at it, like you'd get a lot better. I'm like, I just don't think I would. I really don't. I don't think I'd get better.
I would
better
agree
at that.
With him. I think you would, actually. There's some guys in town, man, or you have the personality. I mean, there's different skills to being a songwriter than just writing a good song. There's the networkers. There's the guys that get in with the artist and they're on the bus with them, and they got good ideas. There's the idea guys that, I mean, they're making just as much money as the Tony Lanes of the world.
That's
you
true.
Know?
That's true.
And I mean, it's not all about, but to the heart of writing songs, I mean, you just dig in and you don't worry about where it comes from or, you know, what it, you know, I try not to figure out the craft as much as I probably should, because I'm afraid if I learn too much,
yeah,
I'll lose something. Like, I want to think there's magic. I want to think there's, you know, lyrics falling from the ceiling.
Sure.
I don't want to figure it out too much because, you know, I probably would be a lot more financially sound if I figured it out. Because there's guys, we all know their names. They figured out the formula. They're writing the formula every day. I'm not a formula writer. I write from the heart. I try to change people's lives.
Never lose that, please.
Yeah.
Never.
I mean, it is one of those things. Well, I'll wear it as a badge of honor. It's a lot of my songs are outside cuts. You know, there's no artist on it. It's not really with the A-team songwriters or whatever, but I try to write what I'm feeling, or, you know, I'll write the straight down the middle summer smash
sure
when it comes in the room, but I'm not, I don't know. I just, I like people. I like where country music's going back to
Me
the
too.
heart of things, you know, with Jordan Davis putting out so many great songs, Cody Johnson putting out, you know, Cole Swindell, you know, Chris Stapleton bringing us back to traditional country, Luke Combs, you know, doing his thing. I love the off the dirt road. You know, we've been on the dirt road for too long. Let's get back to real life. Let's get back to Monday through Thursday, not just concentrating on Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
So, you know, the real life songs where I kind of live.
I agree. I think that is one. It's really cool to hear you say that, like, you like the direction in which the genre is going, especially just being such a respected and great songwriter. Like, sometimes you don't always hear that, because you do hear that there are people that obviously like the machine of it because they figured it out, right? And but it's cool to hear someone like you that you know, I just consider one of the better songwriters today, to hear that. I think that's because for me, that's what I love, right? Like I think that there's a turn in the genre, and I don't discredit whatever anyone else likes.
Sure.
Like, you like what you like. Like, I'm cool.
By all means, I wasn't either.
Of course not.
I wish I had that brain to where I could just lock in, but
sure.
I didn't start writing songs to be rich. I wrote songs to, like, make people cry, to make people super happy, to make them think about their dad, to
make them cry because they're happy. You know,
I mean, that's
it's just, I think that's
it's
so
totally different approach, and
of course
all of it's valid.
And I think that there are people, and this is a straight fact, I think that there are people that love nothing more than those summer hits, right? Than those songs you can turn on in the car. But I also think there's a lot of people, probably more people, that really enjoy the songs like you're mentioning, the ones that make you feel something. And that's the only reason I ever got into country music, right? Was because it made me feel something.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
And I think that there are a lot of people that are that way, probably more than you think. And the people that are that way are probably a little bit afraid to speak up, just because, you know, it might not be the cool thing. They might be some random dude from New Jersey who loves that, and it's just like not a topic of conversation. But I respect that, and I think that that's important. And without guys like you, there probably aren't listeners like me. You know what
Well,
I mean? So
that's very kind of you to say. There's so many great writers in this town, and even the hit songwriters are great writers. But, you know, you just, I love what always brought me back to country music were those heart songs. You know, I grew up with them. I grew up with, you know, Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson. I mean, just guys that just really made you think, made you listen to the words.
They're poets.
You know, and Dave Cobb has this great quote that I always, you know, recycle. He's like, I like to do music that brings you towards the speakers, not push you away. And that, you know, with my songs, you know, I probably should reconsider this whole approach for my, I got girls going to college soon. So I should really switch to the other side. But I think the way I'm writing, I think the way songwriting and country music's going, I think I will be rewarded by staying true to who I am in the next couple years. And,
I
you
agree.
know, it already has with Made for You. And so that was kind of an anomaly at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to see it kind of help swing things
Me
back
too.
to the where I belong.
It's great, man. I
To
love
my
it.
neighborhood.
I love it. I love it, man. I really do. I think that it's just, I don't know. I think that it's cool when music makes you feel a certain way. There's nothing better, in my opinion. All right, so this record, right? South End Kid, 12 songs. Let's talk about it. It's great. I love it.
Well,
And
thank you.
I think that it's refreshing and it's totally your sound, especially after talking to you. This makes a lot of sense when you listen to the whole thing, right?
Well, you said your Bob Seger, Eagles, Springsteen.
Yeah.
Those were the three in the batch for this record. And add like Keith Gaddis. You add all these country guys that I love, Tony Lane. And I made the record. It's my first record. It's my debut album. I'm old as hell, but and it took me that long to make a record, but I made the
The best
record.
things come to those who wait, by the way.
That's right. I made the record I wanted to make at the time I wanted to make it. And you know, I was feeling kind of jaded. It was October, 2 Octobers ago. And I was like, man, I need something. I need a kickstart. I need a creative kickstart. And my buddy Aaron S. Ice is a producer. He does Scotty Mercury, you know, Ryan Hurd. And he always said, we should make a record. And I called him just one day out of the blue. I was like, hey, you remember saying we should make a record? Do you want to make a record? He was like, absolutely. He goes, how about, I've always wanted to make a record between Christmas and New Year's because that's where everybody stops. I just want to do that. So, like, December 28th and 29th, we got in there for 2 days with the best band ever. And he has a little home studio and we rocked it. And out came that record.
It's amazing.
We listened to all, I mean, there were so many songs I've written over the years. I think one of the oldest on that record is like 7 years old.
Wow.
There was a couple that I wrote specifically for the record. I
Nice.
think only one of them ended up making it, but that was the Keith Gaddis song.
Yeah.
And it was so rewarding. It was, you know, without pressure, without expectations. It was me doing what I thought my career as an artist, I use air quotes because you can't see it, but as an artist, stepping out there and figuring out, you know, what it is, you know, not trying to have hit singles, just trying to put out a record that, like, my favorite records that inspired this were Gaddis's Big City Blues,
Love that album.
Radney Foster, See What You Want to See,
Love
Daryl
that one too.
Scott's Aloha from Nashville. I mean, these songs that kind of got other people to cut their songs, it was specifically for that.
I love it.
And to, you know, play a few gigs here and there and get higher profiles on
Sure.
songwriting festivals and whatever. But it was do it our way, our songs, the way we wanted to do it without A&R or anything. So,
I think it's
and
amazing.
I wish that kind of freedom on every artist in Nashville because there's no telling what they could produce if they just went and did exactly what they wanted to do. Kind of like that Randy Houser Magnolia record. Do it your way, what you want to do, and just see what happens. If it doesn't work, who cares? It wasn't going to affect me
Sure.
if one person listened to it or zero people, but the response has been thankfully and you know it's so good.
I'm so glad. I think that's amazing. Was there a part of you that was nervous to kind of put the artist hat on? I mean, you've been writing songs forever. Like being able to have a voice behind some of these songs, like, and now people can go and type in Neil Medley and these songs pop up. Like there's got to be a cool factor to that too, but there's also got to be some sort of a nerve-wracking factor to it all.
Yes, and no, because I knew I had the songs. I mean, if I liked them, I was pretty sure everybody would like them. I was a little nervous on making sure I got my artist thing right on my sound. So we started with a couple songs like Malibu and It's Been Real, and we had really good demos of those. And I said, if we could stay in that world, that orbit, that's what I'm going to sound like. That's the record I want to make.
Nice.
And so it was good to have that that thing. But yeah, it is nervous. I didn't know a thing about making a record.
Sure.
I just knew I pitched songs to people that made records.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was on the other side of that curtain. So it was a huge learning curve for me. I mean, it was, you know, digging into marketing. How do we market a record? How do you, what's a DSP? What's a, you know, a distributor? What, that was the nerve wracking part, and figuring out if that was just going to blow up my regular songwriting gig.
Yeah.
Spending way too much time on this side of the fence than I should as a regular songwriter. But
right.
At the end of the day, it only helped my career. It made me more visible to a lot of A&R people that really only knew me as like the other guy in a lot of songs. You know, if I'm writing a Brent Cobb song, Brent Cobb's normally going to get the credit because he's so great and he has a thing, you know, the Chris Dubois and everything, even the Randy Montana. It's a Randy Montana when he sings the vocal.
Yeah.
But yeah, people went, oh, I thought I knew what Neil did, but this totally changed my mind.
Yeah.
And that was the whole purpose of it. And I think we did an excellent job.
I think you did too. And what was cool for me as a listener is, like, I've been, you know, obviously I'm really engaged with the songwriting world just because that's what I love. But you know, I've been following you on Instagram for a pretty long time. And I think that at some point when I saw this was coming out, someone shared it. I don't remember who it was. I can't say that I like saw like that. I was like digging into a bunch of people trying to figure out what music was out, but someone shared it. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, he put out an album. Let's go listen to it. And then I finally had like a audible voice to a songwriter that I love. And I think that that's really important for a lot of people, especially for, you know, people who love your songs already. And again, you're, like you said, you know, you're not just the other guy now, you're you, and this is what you do. And I think that that's really cool. And there's something really valuable to that as well, that I think is awesome.
And one of the advice S-Ice gave me, he goes, he's the one that produced it, just in case I didn't say that, but he goes, if you don't do this, you don't exist. If they don't know, if you don't have an album, if you don't have music for people to hear, you do not exist. And I was like, duly noted. So I was like, yeah, I wanted to do that. And to get texts from artists who play stadiums and see them at awards and go, man, you crushed that record. Yeah, I listened to every song. One day I'm going to cut this song. Yeah. And I'm like, that was worth it. It's worth way more than millions of streams and everything, maybe. But
that paycheck would be kind of nice. But yeah.
Yeah, my wife would disagree. But but that was what it was for. That was what it was for. Just to shake things up in my career and my creativity.
Well, I think that the coolest thing for me as a music fan is when there's a song that's cut by an artist that you like, but the songwriter version that is possibly out there to the world for people to hear, the first cut version, is, in my opinion, when it's better, that's like the coolest thing in the world. There's a few songs that I have in mind. I won't say names just to not, you know,
sure.
Like, whatever. I don't want to, like, you know, attack anyone for any reason, but there's a couple of songs that I love that are recorded by some great artists, but the songwriter cut is even better, in my opinion. Okay.
I'm kind of in that camp too. I mean, every once in a while there's one that goes, wow, that's really good.
But I think it's because, like, you can really hear it. Like, you're hearing the story from the storyteller, and like, that's, I don't know.
Sure. Cool. Oh, I'm 100% with you. I'm like, yeah, the exceptions are the really good covers.
Yeah.
But for me, it's about Gaddis playing El Cerrito Place. It's, you know, it's about Radney's record. I mean, it's when you hear it, there's a heart that kind of translates through the production, and you're like, this guy meant it. And this guy sang it because it was cool to him, but this guy meant it.
So I'll say the one example I have, and I'm curious if you agree or not, but the one example I will say is Wendell Mobley did a version of There Goes My Life once. And for me, like, I love the song as it is by Kenny, right? But
yes,
like, him singing that song, like, it got me emotional because I was like, oh my God, like this is the man's story out of his voice. on his sleeve. Like there's something, I don't know, for me, like that was a really, like when I heard that for the first time, I literally sat back in my chair and said, oh my God, like this is insane. Like I said, it's heavy. It really is.
Yeah. And Wendell's an amazing singer. I mean,
yeah.
And especially when you load him up with his own story and lyrics. I mean, yeah. I don't know if you can beat it. So yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
I mean, I would go on most of the songs Tony Lane's written.
Yeah.
If you hear his work tape, you're just like, forget about it.
Yeah.
You know, and just good luck to anybody that
wants yeah, right. to, trying to top it.
They are certainly accessible to other artists. Like when Tony Lane sings, I need you. You hear Tim McGraw sing it too, and he did an amazing job, but there's just that growl and that,
yeah,
like that. Here it goes. And
there's a rawness to it all.
I'm sure Tim McGraw would go, yeah, Tony Lane's version's really
I'm
cool.
sure he would, but that check was pretty nice for Tim, so I'm sure that he didn't care all that much either. So
another one, let me tell you about another one, is Jason White's Red Ragtop.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever heard that version. It's the best version.
Is it
The
out there?
Original. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh man.
Jason White, Red Ragtop. Tim McGraw cut it later
Right.
on, had a huge hit with it. And it is, I turn people on to it all the time. They're like, I thought like McGraw cut it off a demo or something. I think Jason White had it on the radio, like college radio at the time. Tim heard it and was on a bus somewhere in Iowa and listened to college radio. And that song came on. He goes, I want to cut that.
That's
And
amazing.
totally my story. It could be all false, so
Sure.
you may want to don't repeat that as it's factual, but that's
Don't
the story.
don't quote the guy. We'll
Yeah,
keep it
yeah.
light.
Don't
I
quote
love
me. Don't
it.
quote me at all. So,
I love it.
but that
I don't know.
version
I
is
love that stuff, man.
unbelievable.
Yeah, I love that stuff. I actually just looked it up. It's actually genre as pop on Apple, which is interesting.
That
So,
sounds about right. That
yeah.
sounds about right.
So
It is not pop. It
yeah.
is basically the same version, but
Yeah.
you know, from the songwriter himself.
Yeah, I love it. I love versions like that. So, let me ask you. I'm reluctant to ask this question, but I'll tell you what mine are if you don't want to answer. But do you have a couple of favorite songs on this record?
I do, you know, for various reasons. What I loved about it and the whole album was we did the album thing.
Yeah.
You know, I get tired of EPs. I get tired. I want to hear if I was going to do something, it couldn't be just a single, 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 single. It was, who am I? This is the package.
Yeah.
I grew up in the 80s. I bought albums. I went to the store midnight, you know, and bought it for the next day. I wanted the album. There for a lot of reasons, but you know, Us That I Miss, absolutely love that. The Gaddis song, Closer All the Time. I don't know if you know Gaddis at all, but
not obviously. I didn't know him personally, but big fan.
yeah, it was to have him sing on that song and to write one with he was always a hero for me ever since El Cerrito Place and the Big City Blues record.
Yeah.
But to sit down and write a song that I thought was one of Gaddis's really good songs. I mean, that could be in the same breath as El Cerrito Place, and it could do in the whole Big City Blues record. It could have been on that record. But to do that and to become friends with him, and I asked him to sing on it, and he graciously did, and to lose him before the record was able to come out. I mean, it was such a, I mean, that'll always have my heart, because we wrote it. When we sat down to write it, he was like, do you ever miss anyone? I was like, well, I lost my mom. I miss her just about every day, you know? So we started the song trying to get over missing someone, and we cut it and it was about my mom. And then he sang on it and it was still about my mom. And then we lost him. Now it's about him and my mom. So that is a favorite. I mean, it is the one about my dad, Like Him These Days, still gets me, because it's the most honest song probably I have on there. And Dancing in the Dark, just to do that. I mean, I took a swing at a Springsteen song, and I think we did okay. And
yeah, great.
thank you. And it's so weird, you know, because I always give, sit quietly behind closed doors, I always give people crap for cutting certain songs. I was like, who would ever want to redo that song or this song or that? And I'm guilty of it. So I took a swing at, you know, Springsteen's absolute classic, and we totally, you know, turned down the lights and, you know, made it look like he was getting ready to hook up instead of just some kind of power anthem that, there's so many. The thing I love about it is I can still go back and listen to it in sequence and enjoy like a drive when I go back home or you know, just around town. I mean, it still sounds good to me, and that's why I made it.
And that's what want, right? Like there's an excitement factor to that, and I think that's amazing. And not to pump my own tires here, but the three songs that you picked are the three on my list as well.
Oh wow!
Also adding Tucson and South on there as well. We're pretty much hitting the nail on the head. I love South End Kid because I think it opens up the record in a really great way, and it basically says like, here's my story, listen to it. And I think that's it, you know, obviously it talks about chasing a dream, but I think it's a really great way to start the whole thing and be at the top of the record and to say like, okay, here's the song, now here's 11 more. Like I think that it's really cool to be able to have that starting point, especially with the song that's so story oriented. And you kind of go through your life if you think about it, right? So
that's 100% true. And I wrote that with Caroline Watkins, and she's great. And and I told her, I said, I apologize. And I guess that was the other song that we kind of wrote for the record, but I hadn't said anything about recording a record to that point. So it was before I declared I was going to make a record. I said, if I ever make a record one day, that I have a title. And she was so kind. She goes, let's go there. I'd love to write that story with you. And instead of like, let's shoot for Blake Shelton or let's do this, she was like, I want to write your story. And we did. And every word is true. And the production, that's one of the productions where it was falling flat. It just felt the way I was playing it in my work tape, it was just falling flat. And Aaron Esiason just took control of that song and made it so interesting production wise and blew it out of the water. And I heard that song, I was like, wow, that is it. And it still fell into the parameters of what we were trying to do.
Sure.
And it was perfect. He did
incredible, dude.
I owe him a lot of credit for making that song, you know.
Yeah.
A good listen.
Incredible. I love the record. If you're listening now and you haven't listened to the record, go listen a million times.
Please.
And let me know your thoughts on it. Yeah. And stream it as many times as you possibly can and share it with your
friends.
Leave
it on at night.
Yeah, leave it on. Mute. You don't have to be loud. You could turn down a little bit. You can fall asleep to it. It'll just play through a couple of times.
Help a brother out. Let's do this.
Yeah, why not? I love it. It's absolutely fantastic. And if you love a real story, that's exactly what you're getting with these 12 songs. And I always sit here and I preach records and I preach albums and why I love them so much. And in a world of singles, you know, the album guy is kind of the outlier, but this is exactly the reason why I love albums. It's got everything and it's got a cover. And I'm also like, I agree with you. I'm with you. When you said the thing about sometimes people covering certain songs, you go, I agree. But I also think there's a lot of value to a cover. And I think that people who redo a cover in a different way, it's really important for the life of the song. So I'm never a hater on covers. I love covers. I think that it's cool. And it's really cool to, you know, hear a different perspective on a song. I've been listening to Dancing in the Dark since I was probably in the womb. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, to hear your version is pretty cool too. And to hear it, stripped down in a different way is pretty awesome. So,
well, thank you. Thank you.
So I love the whole thing. So congratulations. I think it's fantastic. I know this is a tough ask, but I hope you put it on vinyl because I would love to add it to the collection. And, but that's,
I thought about it yesterday. Because I was listening to your Adam Hood record, or
Adam
Hood version, He's one of the best. He's one of my original friends in Nashville.
He's fantastic. So, I'll tell you this, to have Adam Hood's phone number is like the coolest thing in my eyes, because I've been listening to Adam Hood since I was like 15
that's
years
awesome.
old. So I mean, just a side point, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, same here.
Yeah.
And when we put out this record, I leaned on him and his wife, who are doing it all by themselves.
Yeah.
And I got to pick their brains, and they were so very helpful. But he was mentioning his vinyl. He's way more like locked into when you need that. I probably should have had it ready on the release day,
sure.
But I'm thinking maybe the year anniversary, and that way we can put a few more songs on it and make it maybe a double record or something like
yeah.
that.
I think that's really cool. And I think this would sound really great on vinyl, and that's the only reason why I suggested it. But
well, thank you.
Well, when I have a problem, I have a vinyl problem. That's the other thing too. Like I have a little bit of an addiction, right? Like
there's nothing wrong with vinyl problems.
I think that there could be so many worse problems than vinyl.
Yeah, exactly.
Problems, you know what I'm saying?
Definitely, like, that can be.
Like, I think that it's just so great. And it's funny, cause like I didn't get my first vinyl record until probably, I don't know, like I'd say I probably graduated college, right? And my uncle was an avid vinyl collector, and he passed away, and he had all of this massive vinyl collection, doubles and triples, and a lot of it was kind of beat up a little bit. And I guess that's why it's important to me, just because it's priceless. Like I'll never sell it anyway, so it doesn't matter. But a lot of the sleeves were dented on all the corners. There were some rips in there, but I have like all my favorite Springsteen albums. I have
That's awesome.
all of my favorite Eagles albums. Like I have all of this stuff that I didn't have, and all of a sudden I just had it in my collection. And then I was able to add. Now I have, some probably
Quickly,
near 100.
and I'll leave you alone. Favorite Springsteen record?
Oh man, dude. So this is tough. So I think my answer probably changes. But I love The River. I think the story behind The River is fantastic. I mean, that's the coolest thing in the world. But then also, like, I love Born to Run as well. So, but I'd say The River is probably my favorite.
There is no wrong choice in
There
my
really
eyes.
isn't. There really isn't a wrong choice.
Mine's probably Tunnel of Love, because it's just.
It's so crazy you say that, because I was talking to this guy a couple weeks ago, and we just know each other through socials. We're not like friends or anything. We just follow each other, and he's a big Springsteen fan, and he loves Tunnel of Love, and that's the only Springsteen record I've never given a full chance, truthfully.
Yeah, that was the Hollywood version of him, I think.
Yeah,
kind of the divorce record.
Yeah,
but it hit me right when I was really figuring out that I wanted to do music. I
yeah.
mean, it hit me when I was a kid, but that the writing on that record is probably where I got my style from. But
So
that
it's so
one,
funny, because I feel like people are all in on Tunnel of Love. Like there's more people that I know that love it than don't like it. Although I guess the only reason why I've probably never given it a full chance is, again, my dad doesn't like it. So it's one of those things where I'm like, well, if my dad doesn't like it, then why should I? But that's actually not true. There's a lot of stuff I like that my dad doesn't like, but I really do have to give it a full chance. And I think that I'm doing myself a disservice by not, I've listened to it. I've listened to it a few times, but
Sure, sure.
I think I have to go into it with more of an open mind and realize like, okay, it's not like, 1976 Bruce with a beard and long shaggy hair. And you know what I mean? Like it's a
That
little bit
little
different. You,
winter cap he used to wear.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so I don't know. I do think I need to give it a shot, but I am a, so my favorite Springsteen song of all time is Jungle Land.
Wow.
And I
That's
love,
great love. That's so great love.
so you want to know a great story? I'll tell
Sure.
you a great story, because I'm going to tell you anyway, even if you don't want to hear it, I'm going to tell you. But, so I don't know if I've ever actually, I may have told this before, but, when I was going to be a freshman in college, my dad has seen Bruce probably like 20 times, and he went, when he would come to MetLife in New Jersey, he would go with a buddy of his. And when I was a freshman in college, I had an extra ticket. It was the day before I moved into college. And he goes, "Do you want to come to Springsteen tonight?" And I was an idiot. I regretted it. And I said no, because I was nervous about going to college. Sure. Right. And I wanted to see my buddies and all this stuff. Right. So I said no. Dumbest thing I ever did. Because then what happens is he goes off tour for a few years, does the Broadway thing. Then COVID starts. He's off tour for even longer. And I'm like, oh my God, he's never going to go back on tour. I'm never going to see him live. This is terrible. Because, you know, there is a mortality factor to it all. He's sure. in his mid to late 70s. And so then he goes back on tour and those tickets go for sale. And we were able to get tickets for the UBS show on Long Island and in New York. And we paid way too much money for them, way too much money. But at that point I said, I don't really like spend a lot of money in one sitting like this. And, you know, this is maybe my only shot. Yeah. So I did it and it was amazing. Then fast forward to, I guess, August, September, he's playing at MetLife. And my dad just was scrolling around doing whatever he was doing. And he happened to go on StubHub and they happened to be selling the tickets the day of the show or the day before the show for $70. Seats weren't great, but it was $70. I was like, oh, and he texted me, he goes, $70 Bruce tickets. You want to go? I'm like, yeah, I'm in. So we go. And it was New Jersey. Like, that's the other thing. It was New Jersey. And it was like, oh my God, like he's playing in Jersey. Like what more can you ask for? So the set list was great. The show was better. I'll tell you that. And the first one was great too, but the show was better and he played Jungle Land and I got really emotional because my dad looked at me and he goes, I don't think he's played Jungle Land in like 20 years. And I was wow. It was insane. Absolutely. That's insane.
Awesome.
Yeah.
There's so many Springsteen songs I love, and I'm sorry to take us down that rabbit hole, but
I want to go down.
If I'm going to talk to a guy from New Jersey that loves Springsteen, I want to hear.
That's right.
What the masters like to hear.
That's right. I don't know. I think there's something about Jungle Land that just musically, like it took a risk. It really did. Like, I think that it was just, he totally took a risk with that. It's a long song. Obviously there's a lot of instruments in it.
He's got a few long songs.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that song's fantastic. And Clarence. Well,
my brother is the reason I love Springsteen, and our favorite is Thunder Road from way back. So I have to give my brother a shout out, Keith Medley.
My brother's name is Keith too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He definitely brainwashed me. He's the elder brother. So he brainwashed me into Springsteen and a bunch of those bands back then.
I love it. Thunder Road, great song. I think that you should do put a cover on like social medias with Thunder Road. I think that would do great for your voice. Why not?
I wish I played piano. That'd be a great piano.
That would be great too. I wish I played piano too for songs like that.
I'll have to get one of my piano buddies to play it.
There you go. Why not?
I'll sit like a crooner on top of the piano, legs crossed.
Like freaking Dean Martin sitting up there.
Yeah, exactly. Put a scotch up there. And
put a cigar in your mouth, or not even. You could just like hang it on your ear, let it burn off. I love
for
it.
Sure.
Fantastic. For sure. Neil, dude, thanks for coming to talk about your music and your story and kind of what brought you to Nashville, writing songs and doing the thing. I think that you're fantastic. And
thank you.
Your songs are so great. And your music.
I love what you do as well. I appreciate the passion you have for country music and having such great people. I looked at the list of people that have been on this podcast. I'm truly honored to be one of them. And I'm glad you just messaged me, and I'm glad we got to do this.
Well, I appreciate it. I take no credit. Everyone else gets the credit, and I just sit here and what do you say before by directing the boat? That's kind of what I do. I just sit here and direct the conversation, and you know, I get some benefit out of it by talking about some of my favorite stuff.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with it, because you do a really good job, and I do appreciate it. And it's a great lesson.
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate that. It means a lot more than you think. Like, I, you know, you sit here all the time and then you give a lot of people credit, and sometimes you don't ever expect it back. And when you do that, that's
absolutely,
it's really nice. So I really do appreciate that. Everybody listen, go follow Neil on Instagram at Neil Medley, all one word. And please, 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 please go listen to his new record, South End Kid. It's out now. It's fantastic. Share it with your friends, share it with your family. Play it in the background when you're driving to work. Play it when you're doing the dishes. Just listen to it all the time. I promise you, if you love music and you love storytelling, you're going to love this. There's no way that you will not. You will love it. Neil's just a fantastic songwriter, and you've probably listened to a bunch of his songs without even realizing it. So go follow him on Instagram and stay up to date with all that good stuff. Go listen to the record. And thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Remember Country Music Podcast. Remember to rate, subscribe, give us 5 stars if you love the episode, and follow us on Instagram at @RCM_podcast. New episodes come out every Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central, wherever you listen to pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. It's there. It's there to share. That rhymed. That was great. I'm Kyle Corbus. That's Neil Medley. We'll talk to you next week. Peace out.